Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a quick digest of compelling legal issues and practical insights delivered to you in less than 20 minutes.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. And thank you for joining us for this Ogletree Deacon Podcast. My name is Larry Smith, and I'm here with Tiffany Cox Stacy, and we are both shareholders in Ogletree's San Antonio office. And we're here today to talk about the upcoming implementation of the Dallas City Ordinance regarding paid sick leave and also the San Antonio paid sick leave ordinance that are all currently scheduled to go into effect on August 1st of 2019. And we begin a lot of questions from employers about some of the details of these ordinances. So we're going to be talking about that a little bit today. So Tiffany, what are some of the questions that you've gotten from employers?
One question that we have received several times is with regard to unionized workforces and how the ordinance interacts with collective bargaining agreements. In those situations, employers should follow the collective bargaining agreement, and the ordinance does not apply. Larry, what about you? What kind of questions have you been getting lately?
Well, I know we've got a lot of questions related to issues of companies not in San Antonio or Dallas, but who have employees that may or may not be working within those areas and how that applies to them. Both ordinances are real clear that even if a company is not located within the city of Dallas or the city of San Antonio, the requirements of the paid sick leave ordinances still apply. And so what employers would look at would be if they have employees working in the city of Dallas or city of San Antonio, and that's within the city limits, not the suburbs, then you just count the hours that they are working within the city in determining whether they are eligible for the paid sick leave, and in those events, how much paid sick leave they'll be accruing. Again, it's limited to the confines of the city and not the surrounding areas. So employees are allowed to accrue up to 64 hours under the paid sick leave. Tiffany, what happens at the change of the year? How will that, do they roll over? How do they roll over? How do you account for that?
The ordinance requires that accrued, unused, paid sick leave remaining at the end of the year, that needs to be rolled over into the next year up to the applicable cap. So that's either 48 or 64 hours, depending upon your size. That should be rolled over into the new year. And again, is available for employees to use on day one of the new year. Some employers have decided to front load the yearly cap at the first of the year. And when that's done, there's no obligation to roll over time that has been accrued in the preceding year. So you can do it one of two ways, either front load at the beginning of the year, or you do need to be concerned about rolling over the time, again, only up to the applicable cap. And then I would say, you know, in an example of somebody that has accrued the full 64 hours in year one, they have used 40 of those hours in year one, then 24 of those hours are rolling over into year two, and the employee is continuing to accrue new hours up to, again, the applicable cap of either 64 or 48 hours.
And explain again who or what employers accrue to 64 and what employers accrue to 48?
So the ordinance defines medium or large employers and small employers. If you are a medium or large employer, that means that you have more than 15 employees at any time in the preceding 12-month period. So for them, you have a annual cap of 64 hours. If you are a small employer, that's defined by the ordinance as anything other than a medium or large employer. So what does that mean? That means that you have 15 or fewer employees at any time in the preceding 12 months. For those employers, the annual cap is 48 hours.
You know, one of the questions that we've been getting frequently as well is what are hours worked, and whether in computing the 30 hours you've worked in which to accrue an hour of PSL, what do you count and what don't you count? And we've got a lot of questions on that. So it's very similar to the Fair Labor Standards Act. So if somebody is out on vacation, you do not accrue that time, but that does not go to the 30 hours to accrue. If they're on leave, that does not go toward accruing the hours. Again, even if they're being paid, if they're not working the hours, they're not counted toward the 30 hours to accrue to determine how much is being accrued.
Well, on that point, some of you may have joined us for the webinar that we hosted on this same topic. One of the questions that we received from someone in attendance was, is the 30 hours defined by your work week? Are they independent weeks, or do the hours roll from week to week? How would you answer that, Larry?
I would say it really doesn't matter. It's not limited to the work week. So you could work 10 hours this week, 10 hours the next week, and 10 hours the week after that. And that would all be 30, such that I've accrued 1 hour. Or I could work 60 hours in 1 week, and I'd get 2 accrued hours. So the work week doesn't define it at all. It's just really the hours that you are working. What happens, Tiffany, to large employers, say, you know, somebody headquartered in Chicago or New York or Los Angeles, maybe with, you know, 5 or 10,000 employees, but only a handful in either Dallas or San Antonio? Does it then apply to the whole country, or who would it apply to? Which employees would it apply to in those situations?
So this answer may surprise larger employers listening to this podcast, but the size, the employer size, is based upon the number of employees that you have working up to the, or at least 80 hours in either City of Dallas or City of San Antonio. And it's only those employees that are receiving the paid sick leave. So, you know, you could have 1,000 employees outside the state of Texas, but if you only have 12 employees who are working in Dallas, for example, number one, you're considered a small employer, such that you only have to provide up to 48 hours of paid sick leave per year. And only those employees working in Dallas are eligible for the paid sick leave. So this is not something that would apply to the larger company as a whole. Another question that we have received pretty frequently is with regard to the notice requirement. The ordinance requires employers to provide at least monthly notice to employees of their accrued paid sick leave and the paid sick leave that they have used. So many employers do currently provide pay stubs electronically, where the employee can log in online to see that pay stub. Of course, many employers have asked, can we just add this information to the pay stub, as we may already be doing for other forms of leave? And we believe the answer is yes. We would recommend, however, that as the safest practice, that you provide notice to the employees that the information is available on the pay stub, and identify for them how they access that information to ensure your compliance with the ordinance.
And that would also apply to electronic portals where the employee has the ability to log on and find out how much PSL they may have available as well, wouldn't it?
I would agree. Some folks do have it available in that format.
So another question that we frequently got is, how does the PSL and use of the PSL impact essentially no-fault or occurrence-based attendance systems? And in our view, this is going to be similar to how employers have to treat the FMLA. There's a specific non-retaliation provision within these ordinances, and as a result, we would recommend that employers not count the time used as PSL or for these PSL leave against the occurrence or no fault because it is protected type leave, just the same way as you would under the FMLA.
Related to no fault attendance policies or attendance policies in general, the ordinance provides that an employer may request verification from an employee if that employee has been absent for more than 3 consecutive days, citing paid sick leave as the reason for their absence. That's an area where you may have to review your current policies to ensure that you're not requesting verification from the employee prior to them being out for more than 3 consecutive days. And even then, the information that we're requesting from the employee, we cannot ask for information that is so specific that it would require the employee to disclose the nature of the reason for their absence. So the nature of their health condition or the circumstances of an instance of domestic violence. And so that is an area that you should look at in terms of ensuring your current policies are compliant.
Tiffany, what happens if, and again, this is a question we've gotten frequently, that employers already provide some level of paid sick leave, it may be in excess of what's required by the ordinances. Does the fact that they provide that, does that exempt them from the ordinance itself?
I would say it's a starting point. So regardless of what you call your current available time off, whether it's PTO or you have a distinguishing bucket of vacation time and sick time, whatever you call it, that's a start. And you look at that to see either in isolation or totality, are these forms of time off providing enough leave to comply with the ordinances? But that's really not the end of the analysis, because the ordinance requires that we still meet certain obligations, including, for example, providing that notice to the employees about how much accrued time they have and what they've used. Also, the idea of waiting periods. Waiting periods are not permissible as it relates to time off that's needed for a paid sick leave reason. You'll typically see waiting periods of 60 or 90 days for new hires. And so that kind of waiting period is no longer permissible when it involves a paid sick leave reason for the time off. I will say, however, that the ordinance supports the interpretation that new hires work at least that 80 hours before they begin using the leave. Outside of the waiting periods, you have to consider the limited circumstances in which we can request verification and make sure that your current policy is not contrary to what is contemplated by the ordinance. So, you know, back to your basic question, an employer is not required to suddenly create a new bucket of up to 64 hours of paid sick leave if the other forms of leave are sufficient, but still you have to look at the details of your current leave policies to make sure that those details are consistent with and not contrary to the provisions of the ordinance.
So another question that we've got or received frequently relates to people driving through either San Antonio or Dallas. There may be truck drivers, there may be delivery people, or other types of employees. And the question becomes, is that work within the city limits? And the answer to that question we recommend is yes, it is, because they are within the city limits. They may or may not be delivering into the city limits. They may be going through, but the language of the ordinances are pretty clear, and it's just working within the city limits. And the fact that they're driving and that they're driving as part of their job, that would be considered working from what we believe is an interpretation of the ordinance. Tiffany, any other big questions or key questions that you can think that we've got received from employers?
You know, another one is a more immediate concern related to the August 1st compliance deadline. And so that question is, from the employer standpoint, are we able to consider the time off that has already been given to an employee this year as it relates to what further obligations we might have August 1st through end of 2019? Absolutely. So if you have already allowed an employee to take 40 hours, 50 hours off this year, then you look at the difference between the time that has been taken off and the applicable yearly cap. And as of August 1st, that employee could only accrue up to the yearly cap, the difference between the yearly cap and what you've already given. So that is taken into consideration. And for some employees, they may have already utilized up to their yearly cap prior to August 1st, such that they are not accruing anything through the end of the year. And do you have anything else, Larry?
Well, probably just one of the last ones I've got, or one of the last questions we've received, relates to, again, who do we have to provide this type of leave to? And it includes seasonal employees. It includes summer camp employees. It includes people only hired over the Christmas holidays. Again, the underlying question isn't any of that. It's just, have they worked more than 80 hours in the city, and they get 1 hour of PSL for every 30 hours they work. So that's really what you have to focus on, not the kind of employee they are or the time of year they're working. It's, do they meet these requirements? So thanks for listening, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.